In a letter, Emily Dickinson made it clear that she understood the power of poetry.
I used to think, when I was an ungifted girl, that words were cheap and weak. Now I don't know of anything so mighty. Sometimes I write one and look at his outlines until he glows, as no sapphire.
Yet Dickinson lived as a near recluse and refused to share her writing with the world. Alfred Habegger, author of a new Dickinson biography, says her independence grew from her feelings about New England Puritanism. All her family found religion in Amherst Congregationalist Church, but not Dickinson.
She held out. When she wrote to strangers, such as Thomas Wentworth Higginson, who asked her to describe herself, one of the first things she said was that she was the only non-Christian in the family.
And yet there are many biblical references in her poems.
The language saturates her letters and her poems, the language of the Bible. At all times she interprets that in her very own way. And where the Lord's Prayer says, "Thine is the power," She reversed it almost to say, "Mine is the power," and she went ahead and assumed a kind of sovereignty as a writer.
How did she get her start writing poetry? What turned her into a poet?
She loved to express herself to others, and it began in a kind of outpouring of very long letters, very playful in their language. And then around her mid-20s, her verbal self-expression became less abundant and verbose and started to become extremely compressed. Short verse, short lyric verse was the natural expression of that.
I dwell in possibility, a fairer house than prose, more numerous of windows, superior for doors, of chambers as the cedars, impregnable of eye, and for an everlasting roof, the gambrels of the sky. Of visitors, the fairest, for occupation, this, the spreading wide my narrow hands to gather paradise.
Writing resolved the essential conflicts of her life, an intense pleasure in the solitary mental play, but on the other hand, a desire to communicate and to establish an intimate communion with other people. That's partly why, instead of publishing, she circulated her verse by sending a lot of it to her very closest friends. This was a kind of letter.
The decision not to publish was hers, but it had some background with her father.
It certainly did. Her father had some very strong views about women and their correct position in society. He was quite reactionary. The year of his death, he stepped into a hearing room in the State House in Boston to listen to a group of women debate the question of female suffrage. The word he used for those women was scum, so extreme. So Emily Dickinson grew up with this really serious problem, how to express her genius in a household where the ruling presence demands some kind of silence.
They shut me up in prose, as when a little girl they put me in the closet because they liked me still. Still, could themselves have peeped and seen my brain go round, they might as wise have lodged a bird for treason in the pound. Himself has but to will, and easy as a star, abolish his captivity and laugh. No more have I.
But if we can believe her poetry, it was her choice too.
It very much was. She had no desire to lead a public life, as far as we can tell.
She wrote, "Fame of myself, to justify all other plaudit, be superfluous, an incense beyond necessity. Fame of myself, to lack, although my name be else supreme, this were an honor honorless, a futile diadem."
Most writers seek some kind of answering response from readers at large. This is an extraordinarily self-reliant person.
The early 1860s were her most productive period. These were the Civil War years, and also the years that she was most influenced by her muse.
In one year, 1863, she produced virtually 300 poems, almost a poem a day. Understanding that outburst of creativity is really one of the essential problems for a biographer. I'm not sure I can get at it, but it looks as if she had been going through a period of great personal suffering. What the war taught her was that suffering was somehow collective.
There's a certain slant of light on winter afternoons that oppresses like the weight of cathedral tunes. Heavenly hurt it gives us, we can find no scar, but internal difference where the meanings are. None may teach it anything, 'tis the seal, despair, an imperial affliction sent us of the air. When it comes, the landscape listens, shadows hold their breath. When it goes, 'tis like the distance on the look of death.
That spectacle of heroism and death and anguish encouraged her to dive into herself, to explore her own wilderness.
Tell me about the title poem.
My wars are laid away in books. I have one battle more, a foe whom I have never seen, but oft has scanned me o'er, and hesitated me between and others at my side, but chose the best, neglecting me, till all the rest have died. How sweet if I am not forgot by chums that passed away, since playmates at 80 are such a scarcity.
This is one that she wrote late in life, and it seems to me to sum up much of what she had to say. By the time this poem was written, most of her close friends had died, and she found this a desolating experience. And now the time is approaching. She's getting ready for it.
She died in 1886, and 5 years later, she is enormously popular the world over, this quiet little woman who nobody knew about.
Yes. 4 years after her death, her first volume of selected verse was brought out posthumously, and these poems made an immediate splash.
Are we betraying her in some way by enjoying all of her poetry and having biographies written about it?
Oh, I think so, in some ways, yes. However, she's not a living person anymore. For me, that makes all the difference.
Alfred Habegger is the author of an Emily Dickinson biography titled My Wars Are Laid Away in Books. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.